I believe that we each have unique soul gifts to share with the world. You know that, you've been listening to this podcast for a while. And the women that I work with tell me that they think my soul gifts have been in supporting them to build awareness of what you really want out of your private practice and within your life, moving you towards your goals in a structured and confident manner, feeling more calm, in control, and confident by thinking through how you'll focus your day and supporting you to consistently receive referrals each week. When we work together, you will raise your awareness of how much energy you're putting into your practice. You will receive practical advice and steps that you can implement straight away, and you'll finally let go of the need to be constantly working hard in inverted commas, and you'll still see results. Plus, I'll teach you how to see opportunities for abundance for your practice and your life just about everywhere. If you're listening to this and it's landing for you, we're destined to meet. Tell me more about where you're at and we can see together if my coaching program is going to be the right support for you right now. Book your call using the link in the show notes. I can't wait to connect with you. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Let's get on with the show. Welcome to the Private Practice with Soul podcast. My name is Dr. Brooklyn Storm and I help private practice owners align their business back with their soul's calling, with their big vision and with their soul's purpose. Unlike other private practice coaches, I've traveled the world in search of spiritual resources, spiritual tools, education and information so that you can have the transformation that your soul desires and needs so that you can up-level your business. How much fun is this? I love it so much. Guys, if you're not already a member of the Private Practice Monthly Mentorship Group, please check out the show notes. I would love for you to be there. In the meantime, thank you so much for pushing play today. Let's begin. Hey everybody, happy Saturday. Welcome to another episode of the Private Practice with Soul podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I'm so pleased that you're here. And I know I always say that, but I always mean it too. And of course, a big virtual hugs to all our new subscribers. So, okay. What I want to share with you today is a little bit of a story because hopefully me being a little bit open and vulnerable with this will give you guys permission to be a little bit open and vulnerable with it as well. And as I was preparing for today's episode, so today it's Thursday. It's Thursday. I've just finished work and I'm recording this for you and I've been receiving, I sent out this really great email. I don't know if you've got it or hopefully you have and you've opened it. There was this really great coaching moment in there and people have been writing back to me and they're saying, oh my gosh, this was a total gem and thank you very much. This was a golden nugget and it's been so nice. But guess what else has happened over the last 2 or 3 weeks? It's so strange, and I know I can share this with you because you like the strange stuff too, and maybe some of you are further along with this than I am. It's still quite new for me, but I'm just going to totally digress here for a minute. Okay, so here's the thing. I bought this book called – oh, no. I'll digress. I'm going to tell you something else, which I didn't mean to tell you. Okay, here's the thing. So I did some training recently with, I think I mentioned it before on another podcast, with Megan Waterson. So she's a feminist theologian. I didn't know that at the time. I have a very academic mind when it comes to spirituality and manifesting and connecting with your soul and things like that. So I do every course I can possibly find, whether it's a short course, a long course, whatever. And anyway, she happened to be running a course and it was called Mary Magdalene, something about Mary Magdalene. Might have been Mary Magdalene Revealed or the House of Mary Magdalene, something like that. Anyway, I know nothing about the Bible. I was not raised with any religion or anything like that. I was introduced to things as a child, like runestones, crystals, tarot, stuff like that. And with my parents, one of my parents was Church of England and the other one was Roman Catholic, but they're both non-practicing. And, my mum always said to me, you're not born into any religion, darling. You can go off into the world and choose your own if that's what you want to do. But I guess because I'd already been exposed to, crystals and tarot and things like that, that's where my interest lay. But over the years, as you know, like more recently, since my first divorce, and I'm a bit of a Zsa Zsa Gabor here, aren't I? After my first divorce, then I kind of felt like I had this big sense of freedom. And what I did was I just decided that I was going to travel, and I had never left the country. And so I took myself to Paris, right? Because I just thought, well, what woman doesn't want to go to Paris? So I just went. I organized a passport. My girlfriend that I was working with helped me organize a passport because I didn't even know how to do that. I bought a ticket on Expedia, and then I added all these activities on through Expedia. They were like suggested things after you book the ticket. They're like, hey, have you thought about going on a cruise down the Baton Rouge? I was like, no, I haven't. And they're like, it's $30. I was like, okay, let's do that. And then I went to Moulin Rouge and I did all of that sort of stuff. But turned out that that's where I had one of my very first sort of overseas spiritual experiences, and it was life changing. And I came back and I decided that I wanted to keep traveling. And that's when, again, the same girlfriend said, well, did you know that you can go and work overseas and get paid to do that? And I thought, no, I didn't. So anyway, I looked into it. I found a job board, put my resume on there, and that was in the morning while I was at work one day doing job capacity assessments for another company. And then by the end of the day, I went to log off the computer and I thought, oh, I'll just check and see if I've had any replies. And I had it was ridiculous. It was about 12 or 13 job offers. And one of them was to go and work in Marrakesh. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to do that. So would you believe, 2 weeks later, I'm on the plane listening to Arabic for Dummies, teaching myself how to read, speak and write Arabic. It's a long flight, so I have plenty of time to do that. And I was fine. I knew that I was going to go and live over there. I knew it was going to be a bit of a culture shock. I was kind of excited. But between you and I, I think it was about, 20 hours into the flight when I had a panic attack and thought, oh my gosh. And I just really wanted them to turn the car around. But anyway, so I get off at Casablanca, and it wasn't as romantic as I thought it was going to be, because it was very dirty and it wasn't pleasing. And I was just stuck in this airport, and there was men who were giving me certain looks, and I just felt very uncomfortable. And then from there, you catch a very, very small plane into, Morocco, to Marrakesh. So anyway, I'm in Marrakesh, and then I have this other spiritual experience, and I'm walking around Jemaa El Fanar, which is a very famous square in the center of town there. And it means marketplace of the dead, but the literal meaning for that is the people who have little markets. It's like Bourke Street Mall for those of you who are in Melbourne, or like Salamanca if you're in Tasmania. But it's like this big area, just open area, where people have all these stalls. But the little plots, if you like, of all the stalls are passed on generation through generation. And the people usually are doing the work today that their parents were doing, And it was so cool, because not only are you totally intoxicated by all of the smells and spices and things like that, you also get to see things like male belly dancers, and you get to see the pythons and the cobras with the snake charmers, you know, coming up out of the basket. And it's all very, you know, 1001 Arabian Nights. Like, I loved it so much. But it was there that I also met with the gypsies and did all of that sort of fun stuff. And then from there, of course, I don't know if you know much about Morocco, but because of the wars and things like that, they made all of these tunnels. The idea being that when they were getting attacked, being in the tunnels would be very confusing and disorientating for people who were coming in. So now they've turned all of those, you know, sort of tunnels into markets. And you can go into the tunnels and then there's all these markets. It's like when you see Sex in the City, the second one, it's like that. And when you're in there, there are all those really weird kinds of shops, but I was drawn to them. One shop turned out to, it had feathers everywhere, it had birds everywhere, there was a lot of taxidermy happening, there was chalk dust everywhere, da 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 da. Well, it turned out that that particular place was a, well, he was calling himself a white witch. And so it was very interesting from an academic perspective to be in that space, and I use it as an opportunity to really learn about, you know, those beliefs and that culture and things like that. And then walking through the souk, so it's called a souk, not a marketplace, called a souk, S-O-U-Q. I continued along my travels there, and the tunnel feels like it's narrowing as you continue through it. And it's full of hustle and bustle, full of tourists, all excited by, you know, the slippers that curl up at the end. I told you, it was very 1001 Arabian Nights. It's magic. If you haven't been to Marrakesh, I would recommend it. But anyway, I found myself literally being pushed by the force of the crowd into this other little doorway. When I turned around, it's this small shop, and there was this great big tall French man standing there. And he had like the whitest teeth and the deepest voice, and he was wearing like the puffy pants, and you know, I was just mesmerized. I was just like, and I was looking up. I've never seen somebody so tall. And then around the shop, there were all of these shelves, and each shelf had something different. And one shelf had jars of little sort of critters and insects and things like that. And he saw me looking at one of the jars, and he just walks over and he unscrews the lid and he takes one of these little things out and he puts it on me. And guess what? It's a chameleon, and I'd never seen a chameleon before. And then anyway, we sit down and we start talking, da 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 da. I said how his shop reminded me of one that I just went to. And then this guy says, oh, well, I'm not a white witch. I'm the other sort of witch. And then we go out into the back of his shop. And out the back of his shop, he's got this, it's like all dirt, right? Just pressed dirt. There's some trees out there, you know, scraggly looking trees. But there's this great big pit where he's had a fire. I can tell that it's been a fire because it's like charcoal and ash and stuff like that. But there's also something has happened there because there's still remnants of chalk, like different colored chalk and stuff like that. Anyway, so we're sitting out there, and, you know, at that stage in my life, I was smoking. I thought I was like so cool. So I'm smoking cigarettes with this guy, and we're drinking tea because when you're in Arabia, you drink a lot of tea. It's cool though. Like the tea is, it's got real mint leaves in it, and they pummel them up and they use like a little bit of simple syrup and they pour it from a height until it bubbles up for you. It's quite a show. There's a lot of drama in giving you a cup of tea. It's beautiful. So we're sitting out there having tea, and I'm wanting to know more about the culture. I want to understand the belief system. I want to understand how it works. I can't get enough, right? I just want to learn, because I've just learned the opposite stuff. So like, this is almost learning overload, but I'm loving it, right? And then we're there, and he's got this huge wardrobe, a very ornate wardrobe. And it was, I would say originally, obviously it was wood, but it had been painted many, many times, and I could tell that because the paint was peeling away. It was currently trying to be like a pale green, but I could see beneath there was white paint, and beneath that there was like dark blue paint and stuff. And anyway, so this big standalone ornate wardrobe. It had like two doors up the top that you could open up, and then it had a series of maybe, I don't know, I want to say 6 or 8 drawers, like a tall boy, sort of underneath, and the drawers weren't fully closed because they had stuff in them. And then anyway, this little old lady comes hobbling along, and it's honestly like something out of a fairy tale. She's on a walking stick. She's bent over. I can tell she's old because she's got gray hair and she's not looking at me, but she knows the guy. And anyway, he motions to her. It's fine for her to go and rummage around in the drawers. Anyway, she comes over to us a little while later to pay for what she's getting, and she's walking away with chicken feet. I just thought to myself, what? And so he goes and does a transaction or whatever, and so I use that opportunity to go over and have a sticky in the wardrobe because I wanted to see what else was there. So I have a look in the top drawer, and there's like all these chicken feet, and then I have a look in the second drawer, and there's feathers, and then I have a look in the third drawer, and there was like, you know, pots of chalk and stuff like that, and I didn't get to the other drawers. But anyway, it was like really exciting, but at the same time kind of scary. And then at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, no one knows I'm here. This guy takes his work very seriously. It wasn't about me believing in his beliefs. It was about me learning. I just really wanted to, as I said, it was an opportunity for me to be exposed to ideas I hadn't heard of before, and I was so enthralled. But anyway, so I went there and I was learning about all of that, and then from there I was working, obviously. So I was working over there. I was doing some psych assessing for hotels, blah blah blah, and then from there I was going to leave. But then at my going away party, somebody said, no, I can give you a job at a school in Egypt, in the Emirates. So I never heard of the Emirates. Okay, I'm not great with geography. All I knew was Dubai. I didn't realize Dubai was one of 7 Emirates. And this particular job was in one of the 7 Emirates, not Dubai. It was called Sharjah. And Sharjah is like super duper strict. It's like the strictest place in the whole of the Emirates that you can go. I mean, it's kind of like heady and overwhelming in all the best ways, because on each corner, you have, I think it's called a marinette, I'm not sure, but it's where they broadcast the call to prayer. And this call to prayer happens 5 times in a 24-hour period. So it feels like it's constantly happening. And when you first hear it, it's very like you're like, whoa, what's all this? And this is a new experience, and this is awesome and stuff like that. But then over time, it becomes part of your daily existence because you're totally immersed in it and you don't even hear it anymore. And then there are other times where you think to yourself, wow, that's so special. Like, I love the ritual and the culture of, you know, this idea of praying 5 times a day, and the whole society is kind of built on the belief of the Quran. And so that was very different to what I had just been exposed to and learning about in Morocco, which was very different again to what I was learning about in Paris. And so I learned the Quran, and at some point on my journey over there, I fell in love with an Egyptian. And yes, long story short, got jilted on the wedding day. That was a little bit devastating. And then what happened was I went to Africa, and I was learning about different beliefs and spiritual cultures and systems and stuff like that in Africa. In Africa, I ended up in Egypt, which of course is like the best place on the whole planet to learn about the history of religion, the spirituality, all this sort of stuff. So much history there. Like, and I was there for years and just learning about everything. From there, I learned about Roman caste systems and their beliefs. I learned about Isis. I learned about the pharaohs. I learned about worshipping elements. From there, I went on a trip to Greece. While I was in Greece, I learned about you know, like the gods and the goddesses and those types of belief systems, et cetera, et cetera. So I went like, that's just a handful, right? But I've been to so many places because I wanted to learn about belief systems, and that was so important to me. But I never had learned about the Bible, which seems like the obvious one to start with, doesn't it, in some ways. So anyway, it was by doing this work with Mary Magdalene stuff. It's just been so interesting, and it's really like just opened up my mind to so much more stuff. But one of the things that, you know, like I didn't know, for example, that she spent the last 30 years of her life in a cave in, I think it's Baume in the south of France, like, you know, worshipping and preaching and stuff like that. I had no idea. Like, she was pretty cool, actually. Like, I had other ideas about her for a long time based on what I've been told. But anyway, so this was all different. But one of the really cool things is she wrote a gospel around the same time that I think it was, I'm going to get this wrong, I know it, but I think it was about the same time as the gospel of either Thomas or John was written. It was really close to the crucifixion and stuff like that. But anyway, apparently like 3 copies have been found of her gospel. And I think 2 of them were written in Greek. 1 was written in Coptic. And anyway, the really cool story is one of these gospels had quite an adventure, and it ended up being found by a guy who was shopping for antiquities in Egypt. So he found the actual Coptic version, I think it was, of Mary's gospel, and he took that back to Berlin. It's still these days, you can still go and see it in the Berlin Museum, which I think is so cool. Like, why didn't I know this? And then somebody in 1914, I can't remember the name again, sorry, I'm bad with names, can you tell? In 1914, somebody started translating it into German, and apparently the condition of the manuscript afforded for that translation to be able to happen. But then what happened was World War One, which obviously they couldn't continue with the transcription. And then after that, the guy who was transcribing it passed away, and he bequested the work to another scholar, another academic or something. And so he picked up the work and continued with the translation and everything. But then it got to the Second World War, and there was some issue, and he couldn't get it printed or published or something. So he just kind of put it away. And then after a while, he sold it. And you will never believe who ended up with it. None other than Carl Jung. Can you believe that? And Carl Jung kept this manuscript in with the drafts of the Red Book. Oh my gosh. Can you see how, like, in my mind, I'm just blown away thinking, how does all of this happen? But you're probably thinking, Brooklyn, what on earth are you talking about? You've taken me on this wild journey. What on earth has this got to do with private practice? I am going to tell you what it's got to do with private practice. Okay, so I'm reading this stuff about, as I said, the Mary Magdalene stuff. And lately I've been reading a book called The Sophia Code. Now, The Sophia Code is not light reading. You have to have a very open mind. But as I said, I come at things from an academic perspective because I love to learn, right? And I want to put it all together at some point, all this knowledge, and because there is a through line. But anyway, I'm going to go off topic again. I'll try and stay focused. So in the Sophia Codes, you get to learn about these feminine archetypes throughout history. There's Joan of Arc, there's Isis, there's Hathor, Kali Ma, Queen Yun, you get the idea. And anyway, when you learn about all of these feminine archetypes, after you've done that, there's an opportunity for you to complete what's called an initiation. And so that initiation is just something that you read, but apparently it's meant to activate something within you. Whether or not you believe in that, I'm just telling you what it says. So it's meant to activate something within you, like help you I guess on a subconscious level, release things, let things go. So anyway, there's a point to what I'm telling you. Here it is. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I started doing the initiations, right? I've done about 3 now. And all you do is you just read them to yourself. There's nothing, you don't light candles and chant and dance naked under the moon. It's nothing that spectacular. You just read it in the book. So I read it and I thought about it and reflected on it. Then I just kind of let it go. But without even realizing, what's happened is people have started saying to me, oh my gosh, who are you and what have you done with the old Brooklyn? Like, I'm loving these photos of you. This photo is magic. You're glowing. Wow, what are you doing? All of this sort of stuff has just started happening. All these sorts of comments have just started happening. And I'll tell you why. I think it's because I'm at a point now where I'm accepting myself. Now, this is a huge thing for me to share with you. Although you can absolutely look back through all my social media and you'll see what I'm about to say is true. For the past, well, since 2000 and when did I join Facebook? I don't know, 2017 maybe, 2016, 17 around then. I have done hundreds, if not thousands of videos and posts and trainings and workshops and classes and all this sort of stuff. And in every single one of those photos, videos, lives, whatever, you will see me wearing a black t-shirt and having my hair up in, you know, not a messy bun, kind of that loop, you know, how you just pull it through and loop it. That's been me. I've been stuck in that for maybe 5 years. But it, I don't know, it was like not even really a conscious thing. All of a sudden, I just started to go, well, do you know what? I'm not going to do that to my hair anymore. I'm just going to let my hair be normal. And guess what? Nobody cared that my hair was normal. My hair is frizzy. It's so frizzy and it's really curly. Like it looks like I've had a really bad perm. My hair is just curly and frizzy. And so anyway, I've just started going, well, you know what? This is my hair and I'm just going to accept my hair. So I started just putting my hair up in a ponytail. And guess what? Nobody said anything about my hair not looking professional or not looking okay or not looking good. That was the first thing. The second thing was I thought to myself, I think I want to start treating my body a little bit better than I have been. I think I've been using COVID as an excuse for too long for not looking after myself. And I know I'm not somebody who's going to cook and do this and do that. And then I asked that, this sounds so funny, I asked the universe for a sign of like what would be the easiest way for me to start eating better. And the very next thing that I saw was an ad for a company called You Foods, which makes pre-prepared meals from farmers. And it turned out that there are actually farmers in my area that provide the food for You Foods. So that was kind of like win-win. So I signed up for that. Now I'm actually eating vegetables again. And, you know, it fits in with my pescatarian diet and all of that sort of stuff. So I've been doing that for 4 weeks. The other thing that I noticed was I just decided I wasn't going to wear black t-shirts anymore. I kind of banned the black t-shirts and I threw them all out. I had about 30 black t-shirts. Like, you know how you look at the movies and some of those guys just have, you know, 10 versions of the same suit? That was me with my black t-shirts. So I've thrown them all out now, bar two, right? Because I feel like I need two for emergencies. I don't know why. Anyway, I've kept two, which I think is reasonable. I'd say most ladies have one or two black t-shirts. So anyway, I've kept that. But I've started wearing colors. Oh my gosh. And so I wore a white t-shirt and did a photo. And then I, you know, I was on and I was wearing gray and all of this sort of stuff. And what's happened, I think, is that as a result of me being able to, the other thing was, I just got the feeling one day in the last few weeks to put on my runners and go for a big walk. And now probably every other day, I'm going for walks that are like between 6,000 and 7,000 kilometers. No, that's not true. In my mind, I was seeing 7,000, but that's meters. I was walking every day. I'm walking around 6 to 7 kilometers. So where I live, I can walk down to the beautiful big waterfront near me, and it's got like quite a big track there, and I can walk around that and then walk back home. On the way home, I'll stop off and I'll get some fruit and veg and some yogurt and stuff like that. So anyway, it's about 7K. And so this has also been going on in the background, and I'm wearing my activewear again that hasn't seen the light of day in about 12 months. But I think the big lesson that I'm trying to share with you is I have found a way myself of accepting myself. And if you're feeling like you're, you know, Rebecca Campbell talks about dimming your light, and she says, don't dim to fit in. If you're finding that you're dimming your light for whatever reason, for me, it was because I felt like I had to look professional. Turns out that's not true. Do you know what? My idea of the need to look professional resulted in me getting professional headshots done and resulted in me doing professional photos all the time and wearing suit jackets on my calls and stuff like that. Since I've let go of the need to be professional and just be myself, it's as if the vibe of my posts, the vibe of my content, the vibe of my photos, the vibe of my emails, it's all changing. And as a result of that, everything's been lifted up. It's like a much higher vibration. And the opposite to what I was worried about is actually happening, in that I'm calling in more people. What I'm doing is resonating with more people. The energy's a higher energy. It's a higher vibe. And so if you have been struggling yourself to find that place of acceptance, I would just encourage you to do whatever it is that you need to do to get there. For me, it wasn't about psychology. It wasn't about counseling or anything like that. For me, it was, and I've read so many spiritual and religious and sacred texts, as you know. But for me, I just read what I needed to read at the time. And that happened to be, I think, some of this stuff lately around feminine archetypes, and really allowing myself to be inspired by the strength of these women, you know, and realizing, well, hey, I'm a woman too. And, you know, a woman's body is your first country. And of course, I want to accept my own body. And it's through that, not only acceptance of your body, but when you do that, your energy shifts and your energy changes. And I want you to have that experience, because it's going to help you so much in your practice. And this isn't about, you know, doing self-massage. It's not about lighting your candles. It's not about having baths or anything like that. I mean, they're all things that you can do, but they're not the same as you having for yourself that transformational experience of self-acceptance. And I just think so much is now becoming available to me. I mean, I thought I was in a good place, you know, a few months ago, but I can honestly tell you things have just really taken off over the last few weeks since all of this has been happening in and around me, right, in my life and around me. And it's just having these beautiful flow-on effects from a practice. And now I just feel like I've got all this energy and I just kind of don't know what to do with it. I'm just so happy. But anyway, I want that for you too. So listen, if any of this is interesting for you, let me know. But if you're wanting to learn about things like self-acceptance, you don't have to travel to Egypt like I did and go and live in Morocco and talk to, no, you don't have to do that. And you don't have to read the books. I've done it all for you. But if you're wanting to unlock that part of your true potential when it comes to your private practice, then jump on a call with me. Like, I'll put my link to the calendar in the show notes, so you can do that really easily. It's not going to cost you anything, and I promise I will help you. The other thing is, I would love to know what you thought of today's email that went out. So it went out at 6:30 a.m. Australian time, and then I resent it to everybody who didn't open it at 1 o'clock. I would love to know what you thought of that email. It's a different format and it's got a real nugget of gold in there that I just think you're absolutely going to love. But either way, do get in touch. I'd love to hear from you and hear about your journey and hear where you're needing support right now. Thank you so much for your open mind. Thank you so much for your open mind. Thank you for allowing me to be vulnerable with you today in the spirit of sharing a lesson so that you can experience transformation without going through everything I did. And thank you for being your amazing self and for all of the work that you do to support others every single day in your private practice just by being you. Have a beautiful day, ladies. I will see you on Wednesday. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Private Practice with Soul podcast today. If you're looking for clarity, if you need help with branding your processes and bringing everything into alignment with your soul's purpose for your private practice, head to the show notes and click the link for more information about the Private Practice Monthly Mentorship Group. You are going to love it. I can't wait to see you in there. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.